Is this too esoteric?
Look. Welcome to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast.
A classic turn one play. I'm Matthew Orr Bridges.
And I'm Amy Orr. So, here we go.
Okay. The topic is now.
Here comes the topic.
Oh god, not the topic! All right. Okay. Listen, I still really like rotation. I want that to be clear.
Oh. Yeah.
But this first format, this fabled format, maybe not my favorite. Maybe not my favorite format.
Before I respond, I think we pour one out for lost episodes.
Yeah, this is an emergency. This is an emergency recording, editing, and posting. If you are hearing this at our normally scheduled time, then we did it.
Yay!
Yay!
But if not, then
we did our best. Cut us some slack.
Jeez.
Cut us some slack. We have 7 subscribers, and it's not that serious, bro. Anyway. We're gonna pour one out for our lost episode. We had a 45-minute some episode of me so demoralized and you know what? Honestly, I'm secretly happy that my mic wasn't picking up our last episode because wow, those vibes were not good coming off of me when we recorded last week. Since then, I won a set championship.
You stole a set championship.
Amy and I fought in the finals. And in round one, we started the tournament and ended the tournament facing each other. And it was a very nice story.
It was not a nice story. I didn't like the story.
The story was... Well, it was my story. It was my story.
I am not the villain.
Coming to terms with this format. That's what that story was. You can have your own story later. You had your story in Omaha. Don't even...
Yeah, so, and you made people lose it.
Yeah. Well, we
nobody
can talk
heard
about Omaha.
Because you were like, I'm gonna just turn off my mic.
Delete.
Yeah, no, this has been an interesting set and rotation. Very hit or miss for me. High highs, low lows.
Yeah, and wow, those lows have been low for me.
Pretty consistently low for you, but you turned a corner, dude.
Yeah, I was on a hot streak at that set champ. I was running really hot. There was a moment where it clicked for me, where I understood kind of what this format was, and that's what we're going to talk about today. But I was able to squeak it out against you. It was uncomfortable in the games, in all of the games. It was very uncomfy. I never felt... as though I was, like, in control of the situation, you know? Like, we were, at the end of game 2 in the finals, we were in top deck mode, and I top deck a Yzma, and I was like, okay, don't have an answer one time, please. And then you're like, Elsa? And I'm like, of course you have an answer that one time. Anyway, that was a good tournament. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. But it made me realize what this format is. And it is a format... of do you have it? That's the overarching theme that I have gleaned from this first post-rotation format is do you have it?
I mean, I don't want to say that you're right because I want to just think that I've just in general been doing really well and not just happening to have what I need.
Yeah.
But, like... I think I could go through like each of the decks and be like, this is there. Did they have it? This is there. Did they have it?
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's why it feels like such a departure from the other metagames that we've had. And I think the resistance that I have had to accepting this metagame is based off of the same resistance that you felt just then, which is I don't want to think that it came down to luck as much as it has been coming down to luck. I want to think that it is my skill that is making me succeed, and it is my opponent's skill that is trumping me, right?
Right.
Because if somebody beats me, I want them to have outplayed me, not outlucked me. But I have grown convinced that luck is a far bigger factor in the Fabled meta than in really any other metagame that we've had so far.
Yeah, I think I would just have to agree. That kind of it is even what I said when we went to two tournaments in Omaha, where we'd finished day one and we were discussing what we might change for day two. And I said, I don't know, I feel like I know what I'm doing on this deck, and that today I didn't get lucky, and so tomorrow I might.
And, yep, and you did.
And so I'm not going to change anything. And then sure enough, the next day I had all of the luck and won.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to agree with you, but I do.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's a tough position to be put in to agree with me.
Specifically but, you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if somebody else brought up this point, then you'd be like, oh, I never thought of it that way. That's crazy.
Oh my God,
yeah,
such a good point.
Yeah, you're a jerk. and here's what I've been trying to kind of dissect this more, right? Because I don't know that it is as simple as calling it just a purely luck-based format, because I think that is pretty reductive and not very helpful. I don't know how much we can affect things, but I do think it is helpful to dissect issues with a format to better understand kind of how we're feeling, specifically because the moment that I made this realization, I started feeling 100 times better about my poor performance up until now, right? Because I have not been, I've been losing a lot. And the win at the set championships made me realize that I had not gotten worse at the game. Like I did not suddenly lose any goodness, any, what's the word?
Talent?
Talent. Yeah. I did not suddenly lose any talent that I've ever had for this game. It was just in the tournaments that I played in, I didn't have it. So I wrote down a couple things, and I think it boils down to the concept of tempo and catch-up mechanics. So we've talked about tempo on the show in terms of archetypes. In our archetype episode, we talked about like a tempo deck, but that archetype name comes from it, the idea of game tempo, right? Like keeping time with the game. And so doesn't necessarily only have to do with the archetype. The archetype just takes advantage of the philosophy that there is a tempo to the game, that there is a beat that you can play to, and throwing your opponent off beat enough can be a way to win the game, as opposed to an aggro deck that just tries to quest and a control deck that just tries to control, right? So, you know, if you think about the concept of like the curve, the curve is a tempo-based idea. It is saying, I'm going to play a one cost on one, I'm going to play a two cost on two. That is the natural timing of the game. And when you play, for example, like a two cost on turn three, you're going off tempo and you are not maximizing the best plays at the best time. So your timing is off. So I've been thinking about how that relates to this format. And I think the main thing is that removal in general is a very tempo heavy play. Like a tempo heavy concept is removing a character from the board, removing one of your opponent's character. Now, it can be a positive tempo play or it can be a negative tempo play depending on kind of the situation. If you remember last meta with Cinderella Ballroom Singer, right? A one cost Singer 3 that was played heavily in the Amber Steel decks. A turn 1 Cinderella into a turn 2 Let the Storm Rage on to banish your opponent, like whatever your opponent played on turn 1. That was so tempo positive that it made players feel terrible whenever they were on the opposite end of it, right? And the reason for that is because they spent one card for 3 inks worth of a card, got one card in exchange by banishing your character, but then drew a card. So they basically netted 0 while you're down a card and an ink, right? And so that's a very tempo positive play. And I think it's something that this format is missing. I don't know that we have a lot of tempo positive plays anymore. Like, we don't have any songs in this format. We have so few songs that are being played. If you look at the top deck lists, it's like 56 characters. Like, this is the most character heavy meta that we have had probably since maybe set one.
Yeah, we were talking yesterday about Infinity decks and specifically the new Ursula.
Yeah.
That would be a good example of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Where she taps down an opposing character and uses their power to sing a song.
Yeah.
Except, as you said, we are sorely lacking in songs.
We don't have a lot of songs in this format. So it's like a tempo positive play. There's a lot of tempo positive plays. If I use my Fire the Cannons, you know, one cost action. So I spend one ink and I use Fire the Cannons on your character that cost one ink. We have exchanged cards and we have spent the same amount of ink. So that is kind of a tempo neutral play. I have traded my one card for yours, and we spent the same amount. Where we get into tempo positive and negative plays is when, like, those numbers don't line up. So if I spend more ink to get rid of one of your characters, then that's a tempo negative play because I had to commit more resources in order to get rid of something that you played. In the same way that if I have to dedicate two cards worth of removal in order to get rid of one of your cards, that's another tempo negative play. Vice versa, if you are able to use one card to get rid of multiple of my cards, that's a very tempo positive play. So in the previous formats, we had a lot of cards that were inherently tempo positive. So we had Cinderella that was able to sing three cost songs for one ink, right? We had Maui, Hero to All, that was such a beef stick that he was able to challenge multiple times for only five, right? So if he was able to take out six, seven ink worth of characters, then he's an extremely tempo positive play. And at minimum, he's probably neutral, right? Because there's nothing lower than five costs that is going to trade with him. So we don't have a ton of those tempo positive cards anymore. I would say we have Strength of a Raging Fire, which is a four of in every single steel deck, right? We have Elsa, Spirit of Winter. That's the big one. The fifth spirit. Elsa the fifth spirit, who has such a defense on her that even without most of her abilities, she probably is going to team up to take out one of your characters, right? Multiple times. And then you think about kind of, you know, if you're thinking about the tempo of an amethyst mirror where your opponent has played a genie and now you're going into your turn thinking you want to play your genie, but you're like, but I know an Elsa is coming down next turn, and if I play my genie, then they're going to play an Elsa and her ability is going to tap my genie, and then Elsa and genie are going to team up in order to take care of my genie. That is like, the person with the Elsa has such a tempo advantage at that moment because it is throwing your opponent off of their curve. They basically didn't do anything on their last turn if something like that were to happen. So it's a format of incremental tempo advantages, but it's also a format that almost has no way to catch up when you fall too far behind, because the tempo plays that you're making are so incremental that you trying to mount a comeback is also incremental. And so it seems as though advantages tend to snowball very quickly within the Fabled metagame than it ever has before. There aren't very many two for ones that exist in the same way that, like, Be Prepared provided a two for one, Big Sisu, or an X for one, I suppose. Big Sisu provided multiple card values worth of removal, Maui, like we said before. And I don't know that there's a direct parallel to those types of cards in this format, which I think is making this incremental tempo advantage be the top thing that matters in any matchup whatsoever. Is this too esoteric? esoteric.
No. I think what you're saying makes total sense. And I have seen it. I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I have found that the vast majority of the games that I've played have ended with one or the other player, a wide board, and the other person just trying to catch up because it became so imbalanced, you know, that there's no way for them to come back.
Yeah, there's no comeback mechanics that exist in this format right now. I've joked about how with this format, we need wider playmats because, man, if characters stick, they are just there. And I have had more characters on board in this format than I think combined of all of the other formats that we have played.
Yeah, I used to think that the front of my board was for characters, the mid area was for locations, and all the way back was for ink. And now ink's all the way back and characters are wherever they can find a spot.
Right, yeah. And like, my ink is kind of hanging off the table a little bit sometimes, and my characters are kind of just all over the place. I've started having to like set characters on top of other characters because it's like, no, I can't have two rows of characters. That doesn't make sense in my brain. In my brain, there are only two lanes. It is ink and non-ink. And thank God we don't have to deal with locations.
Yeah, yet. Yeah. I mean, like, locations.
I don't even know where those would go. A
very brief period of time. Well, locations and items, they belong together. In that mid row for me, that's not happening anymore.
Well, so a format of habits, not necessarily a bad format. To be clear, I think the DLC has put a spotlight on the health of the format. Is this a healthy format? I know that Blurple is, you know, public enemy number one right now, and it has definitively been the best deck and will continue to be the best deck, I think, for quite a while. So, I mean, if you're looking at just the percentages, though, of the DLC, not necessarily a terrible format. There are a lot of very viable and competitive decks. So, I mean, Blurple had 35% of the metagame going into the DLC, and then you had Amber Steel at 19, Emerald Steel at 15, Amethyst Steel at 15, and then you had, you know, the rest of the people who, you know what, really tried their hardest.
Well, what I think is more important than the actual breakdown of the entire event is, like, only one Blurple made it to top 8.
But, I mean, you're right. Like, Blurple only had one in the top 8. It did end up winning.
Sure, yes. I mean, nobody is saying it's a bad deck. But
it's a very powerful deck. So, of course, you know. And he was the first seed. Did you see his run? He didn't drop a match.
That's amazing.
He didn't drop a match all day. Like, that's historic. Like, that is, even if you're going to go on to win the entire thing, giving up a match or two is pretty likely because of the law of averages, you know. But, man, that dude just blazed through. That's insane.
Yeah.
And again, it's kind of a, you know, like, this is kind of going one level higher than what we were talking about, but it's a format of habits. If you watch his, if you see his matchups, if you looked at his matchups, they were all pretty good matchups for Blurple. I mean, not the insane matchups, but they were, I don't know that he faced Amber Emerald, you know, which is supposed to be Blurple's worst matchup. He didn't face, if he did face Amber Steel, it was only like once, you know, and that's supposed to be a worse matchup for Blurple. But kind of in the same way, do you have it in terms of matchup luck? You know, that's another question to ask is, did you get the right matchup in this tournament? And if you didn't, then you lose. And if you did, then you win.
Yeah. I mean, that's something I've been saying is, like, I am very concerned about the Amber Steel matchup. And somehow in all of these events that I've been playing in, I have encountered it once.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm thinking back to Vegas and I was playing Ruby Amethyst, and this was in the Flynn Rider Sisu Queen's Castle meta. And in Vegas, I think six of my 9 rounds were against Ruby Sapphire, and that was a very did you have it matchup for me, because if I had Flynn on 2 and I was on the play, and you did not have removal for it immediately, I won that game, you know? And I faced Ruby Sapphire 6 times. Like, that's insane. It was the most popular deck. That was the idea. The idea was to go against it as much as possible, but I never faced Steel Song, which was a very tough matchup for my deck. I missed it all day. And it's just like, I mean, that's not strategy. I think that's what makes me feel bad about a format that relies so heavily on this type of play is that's not strategy. That's just luck, you know, that's just hoping for it. And I get that that's part of card games, and I like that it's a part of card games. One of the great things about card games in general is that it is a combination of skill and hidden information and bluffing and also luck. But I think that those things all need to be balanced correctly in order to create a format that people feel as though it's worth playing. And I don't know that I'm convinced that this is the format that balances it correctly. But this format doesn't last for very much longer. Anyway, I feel better about this format knowing that you just have to have it. It still doesn't make me like the format anymore. I think I might be turning into a fabled hater. And, you know, I told you off mic, I don't think I would dislike this format as much as I am growing to if it wasn't the format of Milwaukee, you know? If this was just the format of the set championships that we're going through right now, I think I would be a little bummed because it's like, oh man, I really, really don't have a handle on this format. But the fact that we only have 3 DLCs that we can reasonably go to, the fact that we were able to get tickets for this one out of all the people who tried and many people failed, and the fact that there's no guarantee that we're going to get tickets to any of the others, it puts a lot of pressure on this specific tournament in a way that we haven't experienced for the past year. And I lost my winning in for Top Cut in Vegas. And ever since then, I've just been thinking like, okay, if I just practice a little harder, if I study a little bit more, if I'm a little bit more engaged with the metagame, if I know my matchups, if I know the cards, just a little bit of extra effort would have pushed me into the Top Cut at Vegas. So I know that I'm capable of putting in that much more effort. I can do it this next time. I no longer think that that is the case if the metagame is going to be as luck driven as it appears to be. And that kind of makes me sad. And that goes back to that I think this metagame is probably a little unbalanced in terms of skill, strategy, and luck. But who knows? Maybe I'll have a very lucky day. Maybe we'll have a very lucky run in Milwaukee.
I was going to say, maybe this is my chance then, Matt, and not yours.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have been doing so much better. You've been doing so good in this format so far.
I think that's just because people in Kansas City are, like, bored by Blurple. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's great.
Don't you guys like winning? I don't understand. It'll be interesting to see what the Milwaukee metagame looks like with so many decks being viable. There is an argument that this metagame is actually pretty healthy. I think in a vacuum, that's probably true. I wonder if we will see Blurple have the metagame share that we saw in Italy.
Yeah. I was reading people's responses to the metagame breakdown from Bologna, and, you know, everybody was saying if Blurple wins, then it's only going to go up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, again, only one Blurple made it to the top. Blurple won. Right. But that means that these other decks are entirely viable. And,
yeah.
And people are comfortable with different things. And
sure. It seems like the breakdown is Blurple, decks that are good into Blurple and decks that are good into the decks that are good against Blurple. Like, sure. That's like the three tiers, you know? Yeah. And it also means that I don't think it matters what deck you bring.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. That's why all along I've been saying, like, the one that you're comfortable with.
Yeah. And I think that's an adage that is very true 95% of the time. And
yeah,
I don't think this metagame is the exception. I don't think this metagame is the 5%.
I think that there are always going to be decks that you shouldn't bring, even if you're comfortable with them, because they're ridiculous.
Yeah, maybe. I would argue that if you're super comfortable with an off-meta deck, you will probably have more success than with a deck that you are not nearly as practiced with.
That's true. That is true. But maybe if they're super off-meta, maybe you should get comfortable with a different deck.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe there's a reason it's super off-meta. Yeah, do you think that they're ever going to add a sixth color to the game?
Wait.
It'd be crazy. Like, what would it even be like? I mean, we have, like, some gemstones, and then we have steel. It would probably be something, like, something red, right? Something Hold ruby? On. Like, ruby?
Oh, that's it. Yeah, okay.
That'd be crazy. Crazy.
Wait, we counted it. How many was it? How many people were playing Ruby, the DLC?
Oh, like 30?
That's so crazy.
it was like 30 people out of 2,000. 19 plus 12 is 31, 32, 33, 34. Pretty dang close. 34 decks out of 1,800 played Ruby at all.
When before this, it was just everybody.
It was just one of the best colors. It was a color in the game.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should go.
Yeah.
Smash that button. Smash that like button or whatever. Ring the bell. Follow us on the socials. We're not active on the socials, but follow us anyway.
I mean, I think that if we were followed, we would do stuff.
It's a very chicken and egg problem that we have there.
Yeah. All right. Goodbye.
Anyway, goodbye.